You're listening to a new episode of Empathy Always Wins. Chris, thank you so much for being Maana on Empathy Always Wins. I was just like reading a lot about the incredible work, the upskilling that you do in the region. And as well, Serene on my team was talking to me about how, like, you know, it's inspiring to see, you know, you being based in Lebanon. Lebanon has seen so much in the past few years, but seeing you emerge as a leader and seeing Zaka, and for our listeners, I just wanted to kind of give you the mic to introduce yourself, and thank you so much for taking, you know, the 20 or 30 odd minutes and being Maana today. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Ali, for having me, and thank you for this introduction. So to give your audience a quick introduction about myself, my name is Chris. I have a background in software engineering. I've been working in the tech space for more than 12 years now. I came across artificial intelligence around 8 years ago when I was working on my first company, my first startup. And I was absolutely hooked by the power of data and what you can do, you know, with a simple couple of lines of code. And from there on, I've always had this passion to really share my knowledge and push people into the field. And so I founded Beirut AI as a community to push AI in the region. And then throughout that came out Zaka, which is my current company. And we try to bring education to the whole of the MENA region. So in a quick introduction, I am the co-founder and CEO of Zaka.
And I know that you decided to launch Beirut AI and Zaka. What is the difference between them both? And if you can just clarify that for our audience.
We actually get asked this a lot. So I initially started Beirut AI as a community just to, you know, raise awareness about artificial intelligence. And the point was to push the local ecosystem in Lebanon and to get people in Lebanon to hear about AI and to build solutions with AI. So it was a community. It's now an NGO, and we focus on, again, the mission of pushing AI in the region, but it's limited to Lebanon. So when we wanted to really focus on that mission and make it a full-time mission, we wanted it to be more sustainable and has a bigger reach. So that's where Zaka comes in. Zaka is a for-profit company. It's not an NGO or a community. We're all about, you know, we have community at heart, but we're also a startup, and we want to bring AI education to the whole of the MENA region. So we focus more on the, you know, the MENA region as a whole, not just specifically on Lebanon.
And you know, a lot of people think AI, we're not there yet in this region. Yani, what challenges do you face upon implementing that mission that you're on, democratizing AI and building this community? I'm sure you face some challenges. How did you tackle them, and how are you tackling them?
We have a lot of challenges that we face. First of all, you spoke about the region and about implementing AI in the region. The whole reason why I got into what I'm currently doing, which is education in AI, is because I initially started reaching out to companies and other entities to implement projects. And I discovered that they don't know what AI is, right? Like, you have to educate them on what AI is, what this technology would do, would help them do for their businesses in order to start, you know, working on some projects. So I think the first challenge is education, right? People need to understand what really AI is. It's not robotics, and it's not what we see in the movies. It's most of the time we're talking about algorithms and things that happen kind of in the background. And so this was kind of the first thing that we had to do. It's educate the market and let people and companies know what AI is, to then be able to start discussing projects and implementations of AI. And when you're talking about implementations, the challenges there would be, first of all, access to data. Data is very important for machine learning and AI projects, and the data is lacking in the region. And specifically, a culture around data is not really present in the region. So you need to really have a way to collect information and to store data in a way that's private, that's secure. You need to know how to leverage specific algorithms to mine that data and use it to build some products on some services. So that would be the main challenge when it comes to implementing AI in the MENA region.
You've mentioned a few really good things there, but I want to take it a little sort of step backwards or a notch down in a way. I'm coming to you and I'm a company with thousands of people and I have thousands of data set being yielded every second. What is AI? Why do I need AI?
That's important. Yeah. I always start by defining AI because I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding of artificial intelligence. When they hear of AI, they immediately think of robotics. They think, a humanoid robot that's going to replace me in a couple of years and it's going to take my job or whatever. Most of what AI is algorithms. It's basically a hidden piece of code that, and I say hidden, it's because robotics is something that's visual, that's the hardware that you can see, versus algorithms are something that you do not see, but they basically run on your machines, on your laptops, on your phones, etc. And so an algorithm is basically a way that a programmer gives instructions to the computer. So we tell them exactly what they need to perform step by step, and we call that an algorithm. But AI is called advanced or software 2.0, or smart algorithms, because they don't take instructions as input, they rather take data as input. And so instead of the programmer giving instructions step by step for the computer, we actually give them data and we tell the algorithm to process that data and to learn the patterns from that data and to basically learn to behave or learn to execute that task based on the data that it was given. So I'll give you a quick example. If you're teaching a small kid to recognize animals, let's say in pictures, you show it a picture of a cat and you say, this is a cat. And then you show a picture of a dog and you say, that's a dog. And then you show different pictures of different animals. And the kid will learn to differentiate animals by looking at different pictures. And the same thing, I did not tell the kids what a cat looks like. I did not give him or her rules on how to detect a cat. I actually just show them pictures of cats and they immediately figured out what the cat is. So the same thing is done in machine learning. In the image recognition example, I show the algorithm hundreds of pictures of cats and then hundreds of pictures of dogs, and I let the algorithm figure out what makes a cat and what makes a dog. And that's how machine learning works, right? This is AI that we talk about today.
This is very important in scaling, right? Because you can't have like thousands of people working for a company where you can have an algorithm sort of censoring things or not, especially, with regards to safety. I work in mental health and a lot of people, if it was a forum or if it was something pornographic, a trigger stuff, like you need to kind of let the computer do things but that you can't do 24/7, right? How do you keep something safe? So I love what you've just said right now. I think the next thing I want to talk about is like you're working in Lebanon. It's an unstable and challenging industry. How do you motivate your team to and create an environment for them where they can succeed as a leader?
That's a very good question. I think as a leader, it's important that you set the right environment and set the right mission, and also get the right people who believe in that mission to be part of your team. So people who work at Zaka are not just good AI instructors or good people at delivering sessions. They are also people who really believe in what we are doing, who believe in democratizing AI and access to AI education across the region. And it's because they believe in what we do. Small inconveniences like electricity outages or internet outages, it's not really a barrier for them, right? Of course, it really hinders sometimes productivity, but we all do what we have to do to make things work at the end. And so I believe setting the right mission and really keeping your team in check. Here's what we're doing and here's why we're doing it. This is more important than how, right? We start with the why, we start with the mission that we have, and as long as everyone stays true to the mission, again, there's a lot of challenges everywhere. Lebanon has these kind of challenges. I believe elsewhere you will find other challenges as well. There's no environment that is free of challenges and obstacles, but it's about the mentality and how you approach these obstacles.
Yeah, I know you recently attended the Techni Summit in Egypt. How has that experience been, and what are some key learnings that you were subjected there?
It was an absolutely fabulous experience, to be honest. It was my first time in Egypt, and specifically in Alexandria as well. What I really liked about that event is most of the attendees that came through the booth were students. We were students coming out of university, and I loved their eagerness, and I loved how excited they were in really pushing themselves and their careers into the field. So, like before going to Techni, we went to JITEX, and as you know, JITEX was like the world's biggest tech conference. Had, I don't know, 100,000 attendees or whatever. So there was a lot of people, and it was a huge event. But in fact, Techni was more exhausting for us than JITEX, because we were nonstop talking to excited students. Like, we had a constant stream of students from 10 a.m. until 5, 6 p.m. constantly on the booth, asking questions and eager to learn and to get started and to kind of jump on every opportunity they have. And for me, it's exactly what Zeka is all about. Like, we're about pushing everyone into the field of AI and helping everyone get started in their career. And so we found it to be the perfect audience for us, and we loved it there.
Wow, no, I absolutely love that. And I think that it's very different to, I mean, here's the thing, like TikTok, all the stuff young people uses AI, but we don't understand it. And curiosity is one thing that I see in Gen Z to be the number one thing I love the most about this younger generation. They're very curious. They don't take things, for granted or at light face. They know when you're BSing versus when you're a real influencer, you know what I mean? They know, they can sense it. They can really, they have emotional intelligence. And this may be something that I want to talk to you about. How can we use emotional intelligence in AI? How can we drive emotional intelligence engines in AI? And this is something that fascinates me so much. There's a company called Effectiva in the US. They use basically AI to like see if you're watching a movie, to see which parts of the movie is good with your facial gestures, to see if it's if they should maybe improve this or if it's eliciting the emotion the director wants to, like. But my question here is, how what are the uses of AI that like really, really, really you'd like to share with the audience that perhaps aren't really familiar, but this is the future of AI? Like, how can we get excited about the future of AI?
Wow, I think, yeah, you asked like many questions into one question. So I'll try to answer all of the questions that I can remember. First of all, yes, AI is something that everyone has at least came in contact with without even knowing, right? If you use your mobile, if you have a smartphone, you're using AI, whether you're taking a picture or you're sending a message or you're just writing a Google query or search query or something. AI has been deployed into products and services for the last 3 to 4 years at least. And so again, if you're writing a chat and you can see on your keyboard recommending you the next word to write, or correcting your word or something, this is predictive typing. It's something that uses AI. If you open up Netflix and you're watching a movie, or you're recommended some show to watch, that's also AI, right? If you're shopping online, or if you're listening to music and you get recommendations, or there's plenty of use cases of AI that we don't really notice, but small things that can improve the product that we have. So I really, like, you can think of AI as the next version of software. It's actually called software 2.0. So the reason why I'm saying this is because anywhere that software exists, which is basically everywhere in the world, you have AI, or you will have AI eventually operating. You have some algorithms that can customize the experience for you. And that's the beauty or the advantage of artificial intelligence, is that instead of having one offering, one product that everyone should take and use the same, AI allows me as a product developer to really customize the experience for every user. Mm. And make it so that if you like to use it that way, this is how you will interact and use the product. And so this is how it's going to be in the future. Everything will be customized to you. Like your house, for example, you'll enter your house, it's going to detect your emotions. For example, it's going to detect that, okay, Ali is tired, Maybe I should dim the light and put on some nice music. And I don't know, it's going to detect that you might be a bit cold. It's going to increase the heat. So stuff like that. So it's going to help you have a unique experience, unique that's, you know, you, it's yours, right? So depending on how you're feeling, on how your mood is, or what you want to do, right, or what you like to do, so your habits, it's going to customize life around you, whether it's your house, your car, your workspace, everything. So in my opinion, it's going to be small things happening all around you that's going to improve the quality of your life.
Yeah, and
I hope this answers all the questions that you have.
No, it truly doesn't. And I think one thing I want to kind of get into as we kind of close our incredible discussion is, how can companies use AI right now in their hiring process? Like, how can you know, because I'm thinking about it, okay, from a personal perspective. But say, for example, I'm a team leader, you and I, in 5 years, I don't want to go through millions of resumes. How can we understand or use AI to best select someone? Or how can we utilize AI to reduce less effort and get us to the result we want to get as human beings? Because some people might argue that, you know, you have to sit and talk to people. How can AI get us closer to that to that solution?
Yeah, so AI allows us to automate a lot of the tasks that we have, right? So that task might be sifting through hundreds of CVs, or it might be the actual interview process, or it might be automating some assessment task that you send to your potential hires. And so there's a lot of examples currently of companies that are leveraging AI technologies to automate or facilitate one or multiple parts of the hiring process, whether it's done doing the interviews, or it's actually sifting through CVs and making sure who is shortlisted for an interview or not, or maybe it's automating the task or a tactical assessment or whatever assessment you have, or at least maybe matching, right? Like figuring out if that person with those skill set is a good match for this position or not, right? Because you have the technical skills that are easily measurable, but you also have the human skills, the emotional intelligence and the personality type and the character. And sometimes you need, you know, that character to fit into a specific role so that they can successfully, you know, work in that position. Or maybe you need them to be a specific character to fit within the team. So I think AI will help us to easily do those matches and to easily filter out the good candidates that are good for that position within this company, within that team, versus just, yeah, this person is a good developer, right? We don't need just good developers technically. We need a developer that can fit into whatever this need requires in terms of skills, in terms of personality, character, etc.
I love that. Chris, one last thing before we wrap today's show up and go into our fire round. There's a big, huge debate. This debate is the following. Will chatbots in the region, will Arabs use chatbots, emotional intelligence chatbots? There's this thing going around in the mental health ecosystem. There's a company called Wysa. They use an emotional intelligence chatbot, and it's like, if I'm not feeling well, I have someone to talk to. And it's so good in English. I mean, they're so good at using it. They came to me, tell me, for example, in the region, can we do some, like, look, maybe this works or elsewhere, but the Arabs, it's a little bit difficult to talk to a robot, knowing that it's a robot. We want people. How fast is the adoption going to be from your standpoint? And is it going to be this difficult sooner than later? Or are we going to be fine with it?
I think there are two sides of the problem that you're talking about, right? One of them is maybe the adoption side in terms of will we as Arabs accept to talk to a robot, maybe? I'm not so sure about that. It's not really my area, and I don't know how to answer that question. But I believe the second part of it is the technical side of things, right? And you mentioned something important, which you said that there's a company that offers the same thing in English, and it's really good and it's really nice. So, and this is exactly what my point is. English NLP, or natural language processing, which is the technology that allows robots or AI to actually understand human language, is really good in English, or at least it's so much better in English than it is in Arabic. And this is all because of the research that has gone and the effort that has gone into developing it for the English language versus the little effort that has gone into the Arabic language. So Arabic NLP is a big challenge that we have for the Arabic region, for the Arab region. Mainly it's because, one, there's not a lot of people working on that compared to the number of people working on the English NLP. And this is where we really like to focus on upskilling people and building the talent pool required. We want to have local people solving local problems. And this is one of them, right? You cannot expect engineers in Silicon Valley, for example, to solve Arabic NLP. They don't care, right? They don't even use it there. So you need people who are actually using Arabic to solve that problem. And so I believe with more advancement to the Arabic NLP, with more technologies that being, you know, accurate and having better technologies, better ways for the AI to understand Arabic, I think this will drive adoption. Because you, when you talk to a chatbot, you need to make it feel like you're talking to a person, right? And if the chatbot is using limited technology and cannot really understand all the different accents and dialects, because Arabic is not one Arabic, right? It's different dialects. And this is where things get tricky. So yes, we do have a billion plus person speaking Arabic in the world, but I believe that not every Arabic is the same. You have the Egyptian Arabic different than the Lebanese Arabic, different than the Emirati Arabic or the Saudi Arabic. So these dialects, they're really difficult for the AI to really understand. So I believe it's more of a technical problem that eventually will be solved, and then it's going to drive more adoption for those chatbots.
100%. I truly believe that, Chris. And I think what Zeka's doing is amazing, Yani. So, I mean, to wrap this up, I really want to enter our fire round. That's me asking you a quick question and you sort of giving me a quick answer. Are you okay with that?
Hopefully. I think so.
All right.
Let's try it.
One book that's changed your life.
Wow. There's a lot of books, but one of them, I think it's, do you know Richard Feynman?
Yeah,
Richard Feynman has a book called Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, and it's really about his personal life, and it's one of the books that, yeah, changed my life, I would say.
If you were given one piece of advice, if you gave your 15-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Less talk, more action. Like, I'm really for, you know, taking actions and doing things and you know, just push yourself to do things. And I believe it also links a bit to the entrepreneurship environment. So I would really encourage them to try and not be afraid of failure.
What's one thing you wish the Arab world had that you see around the world and you don't see?
More collaboration and less competition.
100% agree. 100% agree. Chris, it was lovely having you today. And if you want to leave the floor with one last note or one last message, the floor is all yours, Habib.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here as well, Ali. My message would be to everyone about artificial intelligence. I know that people look at AI as a purely technical thing. And if I'm not into technology or computer science or something, I don't really care. I invite everyone to actually learn about what AI is, to learn about this technology, because it's just like electricity. It's going to be everywhere. It is already everywhere, and it's revolutionizing all the industries and all the sectors. So even if you're not working in technology, you need to understand basically what AI is and how it's affecting your industry, because it's going to affect your job, if not now, in the future. So everyone should understand this technology, and invite everyone to dive into it more. And once you do, you will learn that it's not something to be afraid of. It's actually going to elevate our lives, going to augment our capabilities, and it's going to make us better human. Again, thank you, Ali, for hosting me. And it was really a pleasure.
Like, Chris, I love it. I'm going to include all your contact information, your email, your LinkedIn, everything that anyone would love to get in touch with you would need. It's been lovely having you. I think you're doing an incredible job. Please keep us in the loop whenever there's new AI information, leaders, how leaders can utilize AI. This show is considerate a home for you, and thank you so much for being here. I genuinely had a great time.
Do feel free to share it with your friends, drop us a rating on Apple, subscribe to the show, follow it on Spotify, and we'll see you soon in a new episode of Empathy Always Wins. Take care and have a lovely day, guys.